Hello and welcome to Onk Live On Air. I'm your host today, Jason Harris. Onk Live On Air is a podcast from Onk Live, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Onk Live covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, we had the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Brian Bowman about Merkel cell carcinoma. Dr. Bowman is chief of the genitourinary service and an assistant professor of radiation oncology at Washington University School of Medicine in St. Louis, and a member of the NCCN Non-Melanoma Skin Cancer Panel. Dr. Bowman was the co-PI on a paper recently published in JAMA Dermatology showing that adjuvant radiation improves OS for patients with Merkel cell who have surgical margins larger than 1 centimeter. In this exclusive interview, Dr. Bowman discusses the potential for immunotherapy to treat Merkel cell, the importance of radiation therapy in treating this disease, and how his training in art history factors into his work as a radiation oncologist. Thank you for joining us today, Dr. Bowman.
Oh, my pleasure.
Merkel cell carcinoma is a very rare disease, correct?
Yes, it is a very rare disease.
What is the prognosis for patients with this disease?
Prognosis is generally very good for patients with, you know, small lesions that undergo appropriate local therapy, but prognosis certainly declines with larger size tumors, and especially if the disease spreads to the lymph nodes or if it spreads to distant metastatic sites.
Merkel cell tends to be aggressive, right? It spreads rapidly.
It certainly has that capability. There is a lot of heterogeneity with Merkel cell, but I would say of the more common skin cancers, and certainly Merkel cell is relatively uncommon, it can certainly be aggressive.
What kind of available treatment options are there for patients right now?
Treatment options for patients really depends on the stage and extent of the disease. So the preferred treatment option is always going to be, surgical resection of some type. And then generally speaking, that should be followed with post-operative radiation therapy. And, you know, for the very small, well-resected lesions with no other adverse features, you know, I think you could omit radiation. But this is kind of a unique cancer. And then even for something small and seemingly unimpressive clinically, radiation still has benefit and has actually been shown in large retrospective studies to improve survival. Now, if you have metastatic disease, the treatment recommendations are kind of evolving. This is not a disease that has traditionally been particularly responsive to chemotherapy, but there's more and more evidence showing that immunotherapy can work well for this disease.
So what are the trials in the pipeline right now that are generating the most excitement?
Well, I mean, so I'm a radiation oncologist, so some of the trials that are generating the most excitement for me are the ones that are combining radiation with immune therapy to see if we can trigger what we call an abscopal effect, basically where radiation kills the Merkel cell cancer, releases pieces of the cancer into the bloodstream, and essentially helps to generate a more vigorous immune response that is then potentiated by the immune therapy. So we've seen this in a number of different cancers. There's some evidence to suggest that this happens in Merkel, and there have been some trials where we're doing targeted radiation to one or more lesions in metastatic patients and combining it with immune therapy to see if radiation can actually improve the overall response, even at sites that weren't treated with radiation.
So it's really combination therapy that seems to be the way forward.
Well, patients with potentially curable disease, combination therapy is very important. And often that combination therapy is surgery and radiation, but I think that immune therapy is, you know, will likely have a growing and more important role in the future for this disease.
Is there any evidence that targeted therapy is a potential option?
It's an interesting question. It's really not an area where I have particular expertise, but, you know, to my knowledge, there aren't agents that are showing great promise there, at least not yet. I think it's more the immune therapy agents that are showing the most promise at this point. But certainly there's potential for those other agents.
So you were obviously, you just served as a co-PI for a study that showed improved OS for patients with Merkel cell with combined surgery and radiotherapy. So can you take us through that study and summarize your findings?
Sure. So this was a study where we were using a very large database of patients from the National Cancer Database. So this is, you know, arguably the largest collection of patient data for patients with localized Merkel cell. So there were over 6,000 patients that we were able to access to. And, you know, keep in mind, this is, you know, a disease, you know, with very few cases, you know, per year in the U.S. So a very large database, which allows us to do, you know, some interesting studies to try to elucidate treatment approaches, which may be associated with better outcomes. So, you know, what we wanted to do is to look at whether larger clinical excision margins and receipt of adjuvant radiation, so postoperative radiation, if they're associated with improvements in overall survival for patients with localized Merkel cell. And, you know, what we found is that clinical margins that were larger than 1 centimeter were associated with improvements in overall survival, and that improvement was independent of where the tumor was located in the body, of whether the patient got postoperative radiation or not, whether the final pathologic margins were positive, or whether they had other kind of adverse features. We also found that patients who had smaller than 1 centimeter margins who were treated with postoperative radiation, they actually had outcomes that were similar to the patients with larger margins who did not receive radiation. So it appears as though radiation can compensate for a smaller margin, but the best outcomes were when you had a larger margin larger than 1 centimeter and the patients got postoperative radiation. So postoperative radiation was associated with, you know, a survival benefit in this cohort. So we think, you know, larger than one centimeter or larger clinical margin should be something that surgeons, you know, aim for. And then this provides more data that certainly for the smaller clinical margin patients, but also for the larger clinical margin patients, you should probably strongly consider adjuvant radiation therapy or postoperative radiation therapy.
Is there any chance you could have the radiation without surgery?
So that is an option, but generally, you know, we don't think that is the preferred option. So, you know, some form of surgical resection is important. I mean, in Australia, they do kind of less extensive surgeries than what we typically do in the United States. And then they follow that with radiation with a very short delay. And the outcomes with that approach are really excellent. But I think, you know, you want a good surgery that achieves, you know, wide margins, and then follow that with postoperative radiation for all but the most favorable of tumors. What I would say is, though, taking smaller margin may be very appropriate and wise, even if taking that smaller margin will still get you final negative surgical margins, because the clinical margin, just to explain, that's basically the margin that you're taking around the lesion that you can see and where you think it might extend. But then that lesion, and once it's removed, gets sent to the pathologist and it's sectioned, and they look to see if there's any cancer left behind at the cut edge. That would be a positive pathologic margin. Basically, in these cases, you know, you want to limit a very potentially more morbid surgery that's going to require a large reconstruction, because that reconstruction, you know, particularly if it's with a flap or a graft, can delay the time to starting radiation. So, you know, there's a lot of talk among many experts kind of at the national committee level about doing the, you know, the largest appropriate margin, provided that margin will then not interfere with the ability to deliver postoperative radiation, because we want to start the radiation pretty soon after the surgery, ideally.
You just mentioned, you know, national committees. I know you're a member of the NCCN non-melanoma skin cancers panel, and you were in a meeting on Friday. What did you discuss, or what can you tell us about that discussion?
The meetings are sort of confidential, and so what's discussed in the meetings, you know, can't be, you know, divulged. But what I can say is that there was a lot of excellent discussion around, you know, Merkel cell, as well as all the other disease sites that fall under that non-melanoma skin cancer guidelines that, you know, I came away from the meeting very pleased with the sort of rigor of the panel and the panel's approach to making guideline-based and evidence-based really recommendations for the management of these diseases. And I think that, you know, the importance of radiation for this disease site will be, you know, is affirmed as it's always been in the guidelines. And, you know, I'm just happy to be a part of that process. But I think that it's really a rigorous professional group of experts, and they weigh the evidence. And I think I just can't say enough good things about my colleagues on that panel.
Without getting into specifics from that meeting, can you tell us, will there be changes to the standard of care in the near future in MCC?
I don't know that I would, that I'm expecting any major changes in the standard of care. I think that, you know, there is more and more data demonstrating that radiation has value. And I think that, you know, if you look at utilization rates for radiation, you know, in my opinion, they're not as high as we would like. So I think that while the guidelines still support doing it, in practice, many of these patients, you know, just simply are not referred for radiation, or for whatever reason, choose not, you know, to receive radiation. And so I think it's sort of incumbent on dermatologists, surgical oncologists, radiation oncologists, medical oncologists to educate patients about this potential option. And it, because it is very different than how we manage, you know, most other skin cancers. So, you know, we would not do or really even consider postoperative radiation on a relatively small squamous cell that was resected with clean margins. You know, we just wouldn't treat that disease with postoperative radiation. So we're treating Merkel cells, or there's data to support treatment of Merkel cell with postoperative radiation for cancers that are smaller and otherwise quite favorable seeming than what we would do for other skin cancers. So I think that trying to educate providers and patients about the value of postoperative radiation and how, you know, there is some good data. Now, granted, it's retrospective, but I mean, I think it's high quality retrospective data showing an overall survival benefit to doing postoperative radiation. You know, it's something that that really just needs to get out there into the community, because, you know, radiation is often well tolerated. Now, it's very dependent on the site. So, you know, treating a leg, you know, or a shoulder is going to involve a lot less side effects than treating, say, the neck or the face. But we can do these treatments, and the technologies have gotten so much better from a radiation standpoint that, you know, outcomes and toxicity can both be very favorable.
Do you think it's just that the community is just unfamiliar with using radiation in the setting?
It's hard to say the exact reason, but I think that there are certain kind of established referral patterns. And I think that for, like, because this is a relatively rare cancer, it can be, you know, harder to, you know, to change management of a cancer that just no one sees all that often, you know, except for places like WashU, where, you know, we have a pretty high volume of Merkel cell patients because it's being referred from a 4 to 6 hour in any different direction, you know, catchment radius. But for the average provider who may just see, you know, one or two of these a year, it's just not always something that's going to be on their radar to sort of send for radiation. I think that, you know, most providers know if it's a larger tumor, if it's invading other structures, if you can't clear the margin, if it's a recurrent tumor, if it has, you know, if it meets certain other criteria, like, you know, multiple lymph nodes involved, then you would send for radiation. But with Merkel, it's the level of the data is not as robust, and the level of that data disseminating is not as robust. And I say the data is not as robust just because when you're talking about such a rare cancer, you know, it's very hard to do a large prospective trial to establish definitively this is the way to treat these patients. So we're always going to struggle to, have a clinical trial with enough patients on it to actually get us an answer to a relevant clinical question.
How do you work around that problem? There's just not a lot of patients available. So what do you do when you need that kind of clinical evidence?
Well, so I think there's a few things you can do. I mean, one is something that we've already done, which is to, you know, turn to sort of large, you know, national databases, and though they have their advantages and they have their disadvantages. You know, the granularity of the data, you know, is not as good for some things as we'd like it. So, for instance, in the National Cancer Database, we have details on overall survival, but we don't have details on cancer recurrence. Now, with Merkel cell, you know, unlike many other skin cancers, the risk of mortality is quite a bit higher. So that overall survival endpoint, I think, is a relevant one. But, you know, recurrence would be very relevant, local or distant. So we have the large databases. The other opportunity we have is to sort of collaborate with multiple institutions to pool institutional databases where we can have more granularity of data. And then the other, which we're doing as well, is, you know, to go through the larger cooperative groups and actually try to run, you know, multi-center clinical trials, like the one I mentioned about immune therapy and radiation for metastatic disease. So in pooling resources with other centers and with, you know, physicians and healthcare providers who have an interest in Merkel, this is a way to try to improve the treatment paradigm for these patients.
One final question, and this is a little offbeat, but I wanted to know, how did you go from an art and archaeology degree to becoming a radiation oncologist? That's a pretty untraditional paths you've taken.
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, I've always tried to follow my heart. And in college, I was really passionate about art history, and in particular, you know, studying paintings sort of from the Renaissance through French Impressionism. And I really enjoyed, you know, visual analysis. And, you know, later when I decided that I sort of wanted a career where I was serving others, but doing it in a more direct, personal way. So had I become, say, an art historian, you know, I would have taught at a university and I would have had, you know, the satisfaction of teaching. But the work of an art historian doing research, you know, is a bit more solitary. You know, I really wanted to get involved more directly in kind of taking care of others, serving others. And so being a doctor just seemed like a good fit for me to be able to kind of have that personal interaction with patients to help them through, you know, challenging diseases. And for me, you know, radiology and radiation oncology were very appealing because these are kind of imaging driven modalities. So in much the same way that, you know, I would analyze a painting visually, I now have to analyze, you know, CAT scans and MRIs and make determinations on management based on these images. So a lot of the skills of visual analysis that helped me to become a good art historian have really helped with my career as a radiation oncologist. And so I see the training that I got in kind of critical thinking and in clear writing as an art history major to have really helped with medical school and with my current career.
That's all we have time for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of Onc Live On Air. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field and recaps from our State of the Science Summits and Institutional Perspectives in Cancer webinars. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive and at OncLiveSOSS. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and at OncLive State of the Science Summit, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you like today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you're there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.